It is indeed good to be with you, good to be back here again. It's a long haul from Lebanon, Tennessee here. I'd forgotten how long the haul was, but it's a long way back. It is a little better be coming from Lebanon than it is coming from Nashville, because when we were used to be when we would come from here and go meet our daughters in the Nashville area, it would take us at least 8 hours, and it's only 7.5 hours from Lebanon here, so that guy's a half an hour closer. And it's nice because we don't have to get on the interstate until we're all the way up, halfway up the state of Kentucky. So well, that's kind of nice to make the trip. We're going to be looking at Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 through 27, just four short verses. And I entitled it, One Who Rules the Waves, because it is indeed about that. A long time ago, Mark Twain said of the weather, everybody talks about it, but nobody ever does anything about it. And you kind of understand that. And here, you know how the weather changes all the time. We're always changing. Interestingly enough, in our text, Jesus does do something about the weather. And in fact, he's going to stop a storm. We'll see that in a few moments. And so I think that is interesting. The miracles of Jesus are termed signs, wonders, and mighty deeds. That's really the translation of the word miracle. It's mighty deeds. In fact, it's the word we get dynamite from. Dunamis, it's powerful. And so they are those. And so in a way, we're going to see a little bit of all of those. They are signs because they're designed to teach something. They are wonders because folks are amazed at what they see. And they are mighty deeds because he's going to demonstrate his power over nature itself in our text this evening. Jesus didn't heal every leper. He didn't cause every blind man to see. And he didn't raise every widow's son. All of those were teaching opportunities. And so he takes advantage of those teaching opportunities. And even today's miracle is one of those teaching opportunities for him. Just as Jesus had just instructed his disciples to cross the Sea of Galilee. So he basically says, cross the Sea of Galilee and go to the other side. Matthew chapter 8, verse 18 says, Now when Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to depart to the other side of the sea. So many people were surrounding him. He says, let's get in a boat and cross over the sea. And so they're going to do that. When he got into the boat, his disciples followed him, and behold, there arose a great storm on the sea, so that the boat was being covered with waves. But Jesus himself was asleep. And it's an interesting text. There are three main characters in the story, interestingly enough. The three characters are as follows. First, the first character is the storm itself, which rages. It's almost as if the storm has a life of its own. The second is Jesus who sleeps. He's asleep when this storm starts, and that's interesting. And the third one is his club of little faith, because his disciples have little faith, and he makes a big deal of that. And he will literally use those words to describe their faith, their little faith. All of them are saying, look at Jesus who is asleep at the center of it all. How in the world can he be sleeping? The Sea of Galilee is a really small body of water. We wouldn't really call it a sea. It is 8 miles across and 12 miles long. And it's more like a big lake, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. In fact, Luke, who is a world traveler and knows what seas really look like, will never call it a sea. He doesn't call it the Sea of Galilee. He will call it the Lake of Galilee or the Lake of Tiberias. But he's always going to call it a lake. He knows what an ocean looks like. And so I think that is interesting. It is 700 feet below sea level. Mediterranean is here, 700 feet higher. And the Sea of Galilee is 700 feet lower. And so it's there, 700 feet below. The Jordan River will start way up at the mountains and wind down into the Sea of Galilee. And then from there it goes down to the Dead Sea. And it will go to the Dead Sea, which is 1,300 feet below sea level. It's one of the deepest places anywhere on the earth. And so it's a deep ocean. Here are a couple of pictures. You can see this picture of the Sea of Galilee. And again, imagine at that widest point from Magdala across is only 8 miles and 12 miles from the very top, Capernaum, all the way down to the bottom. And so it's just that big. And again, the picture you see over on the right is the picture of the Jordan River emptying from it into the Dead Sea. And the Dead Sea, by the way, interestingly enough, is drying up. If you go to see it today, it is much smaller than it was when I made my first trip there in 1984. But it's much smaller. It's drying up, which I think is interesting. Here are a couple of pictures that I took of the Sea of Galilee, one from a boat and one from the shore, but you're looking across the Sea of Galilee there. It is a significant discovery was made in 1986 when a 2,000-year-old fishing boat known as the Jesus boat or the Galilee boat was found on the shore of the Sea of Galilee during a drought that lowered the lake's level, and so it has been lowered. It was 27 feet long, and it dated from the first century AD. It's the type of vessel that Jesus and his disciples would have used, and it offers a kind of nice historical insight into what ancient fishing practices were. After careful excavation, the boat was preserved, and it's now on display. And you'll see a picture now. The picture you see over on the left is what it looked like back in 1987 when they first found it. I got to see it when it was first found, and it was really interesting to get to see it. And they had put it under some special solution to make sure that it wouldn't rot away. The picture you see over on the left at the top is what it looks like today. If you go to the museum there, that's what you'll see today. And down below is a boat about the size of the one Jesus and his disciples would have been in. He's got to be big enough for 13 of them to get in it. And so it's a good sized boat, but they're all in this boat together. The Sea of Galilee is surrounded on three sides, the north, the east, and the south, and part of the west by mountains. So you typically have mountains, again, on three full sides and a little bit even on the west side. So on the west side, there's even a few mountains there as well. The wind will sweep down from the Mediterranean or the mountains, and a terrible storm can come up. And you can imagine the storms are blowing across the mountains or coming off of the Mediterranean, and they will blow across the Sea of Galilee. I remember one of my trips several years ago. I had students from probably Lipscomb then, back in those days, and we were in a boat, and a storm came up while we were in the boat, and they wanted me to still the storm. And I said, Jesus does that. I don't do that. I don't still storms. But interestingly enough, there was a little bit of a storm then, but it wasn't much of one. We didn't see a big storm. Storms on the Sea of Galilee come from three directions, mainly from the east, the south, and the west. They never come from the north. The strongest ones usually originate in the east, and in fact, the one in our story may be from the east. It could be from the west. The storm it described in Matthew, Mark, and Luke seems to have been a detailed account of a storm that was generated by winds blowing from the eastern shore of the lake. So it looks like it may come from the east. The storms usually start early in the afternoon and cause apprehension among local fishermen even today. If you're a fisherman and you're in the boats and the storms come up, you're ready to get off the boat and get back to the shore. Storms from the west are very dangerous. They're the ones that are going to be coming off the Mediterranean, and they will arrive suddenly. So it could be even from that direction. We're not sure. The gusts of wind will form rapidly, forcing the entering between the steep cliffs and descending with increasing power into the lake, about 700 feet below sea level. So it's coming down onto the sea itself. In a matter of minutes, the gusts and the wind transform a smooth surface of water into seething and roaring cauldron. The inner calm of Jesus is like the security of a child in his parents' arms. He's asleep because he knows God's in charge of all of this. And he also knows, he's already told them, that he's going to die a different way. He's going to be lifted up. He's going to be crucified. And he's warned them about that. And it's interesting, but he is asleep, sort of the calm again of kids in parents' arms. And I think that's really quite striking, to say the least. Jesus had been working hard all day long, and so he's tired. He's worn out, and you can imagine. The disciples should have gained comfort from his presence, his power, his promises, and their love for the Master. In fact, They should have known this couldn't be the end. We'll talk more about that in a moment. And they came to him and woke him, saying, "Save us, Lord, we are perishing." And he said to them, "Why are you afraid, you men of little faith?" And he got up and rebuked the winds and the sea, and it became perfectly calm. The men were amazed and said, "What kind of man is this that even the winds and the sea obey him?" Again, our text, I think, is striking. Since the disciples claimed to believe that Jesus was the Messiah, they should have been convinced that he couldn't die in a storm. After all, he can't die in this storm, and we're with him, and this can't be the end of it all. Because he's going to die on a cross. He's going to be crucified. He's warned them of that. And so this is what's going to happen. And so they should have known that this couldn't be the end, although I think they were surprised. This was no ordinary storm. It was bigger than they'd imagined. The storms, again, the waves are going across the boat, and they're afraid it's going to sink. Several of these men that Jesus called are experienced fishermen. You remember good old Peter and Andrew and James and John? At least four of them are fishermen. And in fact, I just did a text from John last week at church back in Lebanon, and it was interesting because my text was that text from John chapter 21. And it was really interesting to see Peter saying, "Let's go fishing." And he talked seven of them into getting the boat with him and going fishing. They've been there before. They're freaking out. And I guess that might be normal to freak out if you're a fisherman and you know what storms are like. And this is a worse storm than they've ever seen before. And so they're frightened by all of this. I think it's normal. See them running over to Jesus and when he's catching some sleep, and they start shaking him. "Jesus, do something. We're going to die." They're afraid that death is around the corner for them. They are filled with fear. That's what our text says. You shouldn't be too hard on them, though. I mean, you know, if you're in the middle of a storm like that, it's kind of frightening. And it's going to be terribly frightening if it's getting so bad that the waves are going across your boat and you're afraid your boat may sink even. And so that's the case. But at least they know where to go. When there's a problem, who are you going to go to? Well, they're going to go to Jesus. And so that's exactly what they do. They head to Jesus because they knew if anyone could help them, it was him. It was he. It had to be he who could help them. And so I think that is, again, striking in our text. Jesus had all of this in his control. Interestingly enough, the storm actually was under Jesus' control before he calmed it. He was in charge. God is in charge of it all, and he's God in the flesh. So he's in charge of it all from the very beginning before he ever calms the sea. And so he is in charge of everything that's happening. And I think that is striking, to say the least. There's this wonderful poem and hymn by William Cowper. You probably know it. In fact, we could sing it. It is, "God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea. He rides upon the storm. Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds you so much dread are big with mercy and shall break with blessings on your head." I love that. It's a great poem, isn't it? And it's a great song. We sing it frequently. And in fact, if we had sung a song beforehand, I would have gotten somebody to lead it, probably. But it's a good song for us to sing. Jesus rebukes the wind, and there's a great, deep calm. Now, that's, I think, the amazing thing. It doesn't happen the way you'd expect. You know, after a storm like that, the waves are going to keep coming for a while. But just like that, it's calm. And they are surprised. Jesus will say in Mark, "Hush, be still." I like it. I like the language there. "Hush, you be still." And so it's really interesting. In fact, one author suggested that he probably didn't say "hush." He probably said "peace," because that's the norm for good Jews, to say "peace, shalom." And so that may be the case. It is well known that after the winds diminish, the waves continue to roll. But it is not so here. He's in control of even the waves. Isn't that interesting? Not just the storm, and he's in control of the waves, not just the wind even. Jesus returns to the question of their faith. He will call them, "You men of little faith." But at least they have some faith. They trust Him. The story demonstrates Jesus' power over creation, suggesting that He is more than just a human being. He's not just a man. A just plain man isn't going to call it. You know, Mark Twain is right. We all talk about the weather, but we don't do anything about it. We can't do anything about it. But Jesus is in charge. And it's interesting. The disciples' fear highlights the contrast between human anxiety and Jesus' ability to bring peace. Even in our lives, when there's turmoil, Jesus brings peace. And He can bring peace to us. And I think that's striking. He's in charge. The story is often interpreted as a metaphor for life's challenges and the importance of trusting Jesus to guide us through them. And I think that's probably the case. That may be the reason this passage has become so popular, why we get songs about it, etc. It is because we face storms in this life, and they're really sometimes pretty tough storms. We don't know how to handle them. But Jesus is in charge. He'll guide us through them. He will help us get through all that's happening. Even those who follow Jesus can face storms. They can find refuge and strength in Him. When you're facing a real storm in life, you can feel sure that Jesus is still in charge. Even when it's health problems, and you're struggling with those, she's shaking her head, yes. Even when those are the kind of difficulties you have, you've got those storms, or it may be you lose a job and you're wondering, how am I going to pay the bills? All of those kind of storms are real, but He's in charge. Amen. And that's important for us to realize and take advantage of. The storm reminds us that God is present even in the midst of difficult times. Jesus will say to the disciples, "I will be with you always, even till the end of the age. I'm going to be with you guys. I know it's going to be tough going, guys, but I'm going to be with you." And He warns them, and it's the message for us as well. He indeed is with us and in charge. The disciples' journey shows how trials can lead to a deeper understanding and faith in Jesus. They had a little faith because at least they went to Jesus and said, "Jesus, you can fix this problem. We're sure you can." So they had a little bit of faith at least. But it's more than that. They're going to grow. It's going to grow. And so this is a place for a deeper understanding what faith really is. Jesus is indeed the creator of heaven and earth. He demonstrates His mastery over even the most intense natural phenomena at the Sea of Galilee, calming storms to foster the growth of His disciples' faith as well as ours as well. I think that's the message of this whole text. I only have 4 verses, so my lesson is going to be short tonight. But it's really interesting. You see that He is indeed in charge, and that's important for us to realize. And I'm out. That's it. It's my last slide. I hope that's meaningful to you. It's a wonderful text. It's a short text, but it's a meaningful one. It helps us to see who Jesus is and to see that He indeed is in charge. And that's who we are as well. We're in charge, and He will come to our rescue. No matter what is happening, He's there to give us aid and comfort when we are struggling. We're going to sing a song as an invitation song now, and it's early. We're getting out early tonight. We'll sing an invitation song in a few moments, but hopefully you have grown some faith as well, and that your faith may cause you this evening to need to do something about it, about that faith, and put that faith into action. And we'd be happy to assist you in doing that if you need to come as we stand and as we sing.